This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Layla Mutin. Thank you for joining me on my weekly podcast, where I weigh in on your questions, concerns, topics of interest, things I think you should know, all of that. And you can email me your questions or any topics you'd like to hear me discuss on this podcast. Email to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. If you don't already subscribe to our Intelligent Medicine newsletter, it is weekly. It comes out weekly and it's free. Normally comes out every Thursday. You can sign up by going to www.drhoffman.com. That's drhoffman.com. You can unsubscribe at any time. So I've got an email here from Cheryl. Cheryl writes, "Dear Layla, I am not only on a gluten-free diet, but also grain-free. I've been grain-free for 5 years and reaped many benefits, including more energy, clearer thinking, weight loss, and easy weight maintenance and better digestion. My question, is quinoa a grain or a seed? If I start eating quinoa, will it undo all the good I have done on my grain-free diet? Thank you, Cheryl." Cheryl, by the way, kudos to you for being grain-free for 5 years, reaping all the benefits. And these are benefits had by many. And as you well know yourself, better digestion, more energy, weight is no longer a problem or an issue. Clearer thinking, so forth and so on. You can remain grain-free. And so let's talk about quinoa. And for those of you who don't know what quinoa is, let me spell it first, because many pronounce it quinoa. It's Q-U-I-N-O-A. It's called a gluten-free grain. Q-U-I-N-O-A. It's called more than that. But let's see. Is it a grain or a seed, you know, and people believe it's a grain. Doctors tell their patients it's a grain. Quinoa is the seed of the goosefoot plant. It's frequently called a grain because it's used and cooked like one, and it's often called an ancient grain and a whole grain. These terms make it confusing, but guess what? It is not a grain. It's a gluten-free pseudo-cereal, if we may say so. It's a pseudo-cereal. It's not a real cereal because it's not a grain. It's a super seed because it's quite nutritious. It's technically a seed. However, there are many benefits to quinoa. It's a popular food. It's probably the most popular gluten-free grain next to rice. Most of you who are on gluten-free diets, you're already eating rice, right? Brown rice, wild rice. Wild rice is actually a different species than rice. But you're eating quinoa. You're eating buckwheat, which is not wheat. If you're on a gluten-free diet, buckwheat is a different species. You're eating amaranth. You're eating teff. So quinoa because it's a seed. And, you know, a lot of people inquire if it's paleo. Cheryl appears to be on a paleo-like diet if she's been grain-free all this time. And a lot of people are asking experts on the paleo diet, well, is quinoa really paleo-friendly? So we could take a dive into this. So what is quinoa paleo? Well, yes, and maybe not. It's a vague answer, but that's because the position of quinoa in a paleo diet depends on the individual whose diet it is. So how does quinoa fit into a paleo type diet? So just because we know that paleo is not a grain, that it's a seed, many people jump to the immediate conclusion that it's paleo, right? It's a seed, and many other seeds are allowed on a paleo diet, so why not quinoa? This is a good point. And those looking for grain alternatives, quinoa has much less potential damage than regular grains. Quinoa is often a good choice. With that being said, however, quinoa actually does contain some of the same potentially harmful properties as grains. And I'm bringing this to you from the Ultimate Paleo Guide. If you want to Google the Ultimate Paleo Guide, there's a lot of nice information there. So Cheryl's question is, if I start eating quinoa, will it undo all the good I've done on my grain-free diet? I don't know. If you put it permanently back into your diet and you notice certain features of your good health start to diminish, then it's possible it's adversely affecting you. Right? So, how doesn't quinoa fit into a paleo diet? It's technically gluten-free, but its paleo diet is not about gluten-free grains. But people process quinoa differently, maybe effectively, maybe in Cheryl's case, less effectively once you introduce a grain. It does have a lot of carbs, just so you know. So being grain-free, you're already on a lower-carb diet. So if you start eating quinoa, you may find that it's a little carb-heavy for you. Maybe you're going to have less energy because of changes in your blood sugar. So the verdict on quinoa, according to the Ultimate Paleo Guide, it is not paleo. You'll want to avoid quinoa for a few reasons, namely because of the digestive issues it can cause and because of its high carb content. If you're transitioning to paleo for weight loss benefits, you want to avoid quinoa because the grain food group and quinoa, I know I just said quinoa is not a grain, but it kind of falls in there with its, the way it's used as a pseudo cereal. So essentially quinoa is okay in principle, but not necessarily okay in practice. So, and another thing, if you really feel the need to include quinoa in your diet, the best question to ask yourself is why? While quinoa might be best used as a stopgap while you're transitioning from a standard American diet to a full paleo diet, and Cheryl, I know that's not you. You've already been doing this for a few years. Once you've made a transition from the standard American diet to a paleo, there's really no reason to incorporate it into your regular diet as much. So you're better off getting resistant starch foods like from your sweet potatoes and bananas and things like that. Another thing is, among people with celiac disease or other food allergies, but particularly celiac disease, gluten intolerance, we often find that they're also suffering from some cross-reactivity with other foods, such as quinoa. So in that regard, it can be problematic. I've seen a lot of people with either celiac disease or gluten intolerance allergic to a whole list of other foods, quinoa being one of them. So it's something to keep in mind going forward when you're thinking about your use of quinoa. Cheryl, I want to thank you for that very thoughtful question, and thank you for listening to Intelligent Medicine. I hope that helps you out. You could try it out. You could see how you feel. You could have it once in a while, but there is no reason for you to incorporate it if you've already reaped such wonderful health benefits. Continued good health to you. Another thing I want to bring up, that we just found this out in the month of April in experimental biology. A common food additive may weaken defenses against the flu. Research conducted in mice suggests the food additive, you ready? It's TBHQ, tert-butyl hydroquinone. That's TBHQ. You've probably seen this on the ingredient label of maybe some of your cereals or packaged processed food. It's a common preservative. So research conducted in mice suggests the food additive TBHQ, found in many common products from frozen meat to crackers and fried foods, suppresses the immune response the body mounts when fighting the flu. I think you also find this stuff in like frozen chicken nuggets and things of that nature. I'm thinking of some fast food places. In addition to increasing the severity of flu symptoms, the study found evidence that TBHQ exposure could reduce the effectiveness of the flu vaccine through its effects on T cells, which is a vital component of the immune system, your immune T cells. Researchers say the connection may help explain why seasonal influenza continues to pose a major threat worldwide. An estimated 290,000 to 650,000 people globally die from flu-related respiratory problems each year. Our study showed that mice on a TBHQ diet had a weakened immune response to influenza infection, said Robert Freeborn, a fourth-year PhD candidate at Michigan State University. In our mouse model, TBHQ suppressed the function of two types of T cells, helper and killer T cells. Ultimately, this led to more severe symptoms during a subsequent influenza infection. Freeborn will present the research at the American Society for Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics annual meeting. And this meeting just happened at the 2019 Experimental Biology meeting, which was held earlier in April in Florida. When a person is infected with flu virus, helper T cells direct other parts of the immune system and help coordinate an appropriate response, while killer T cells hunt down infected cells and clear them from the body. So we've got helper T cells, which direct other parts of the immune system to help coordinate a response, and killer T cells hunt down, they kill infected cells and clear them from the body. In their experiments, the researchers found mice eating a TBHQ spiked diet were slower to activate both helper T cells and killer T cells, resulting in slower clearance of the virus. Right now, The researcher says the leading hypothesis is that TBHQ causes these effects by upregulating some proteins which are known to suppress the immune system. Expression of these proteins, which include interleukin-10, we know which is inflammatory, was upregulated in two different models that they use in the lab. However, more work is necessary to determine if upregulation of these suppressive proteins is indeed causative for the effects of TBHQ during influenza infection. What's more, when the mice were later reinfected with a different but related strain of influenza, those on the TBHQ diet had a longer illness and lost more weight. This suggests that TBHQ impaired the memory response that typically primes the immune system to fight. So T cells are involved in the immune response to a variety of diseases, so TBHQ could also play roles in other types of infectious disease. Now, TBHQ is used in many foods, all right, ranging from crackers to crisps to fast foods. It's also found in certain brands of pet foods, as well as in cosmetic and baby skincare products, varnish, lacquers, and resins. It's used in the stabilization process of explosive compounds. The risks and side effects of this preservative product far outweigh the benefits of it being used as a highly unsafe preservative ingredient. So, TBHQ is in fact a chemical preservative, which is a form of butane. It is used in foodstuffs to delay the onset of rancidness and greatly extends the storage life of foods. That's why you find it in a lot of your processed foods. It gives them shelf life. It's no wonder that certain fast foods and convenience foods seem to last a lifetime on the shelf these days. The FDA allows amounts of up to 0.02% of the total oils in food to be TBHQ. This may not sound like a lot, but it does tend to make one wonder why there needs to be a limit on the amount if it's apparently harmless. Mind you, anything which derives its origins from butane, hello, lighter fluid, could hardly be classified as safe, no matter how small the dose. Consuming high doses between 1 and 4 grams of TBHQ can cause nausea, delirium, collapse, tinnitus, which is ringing in the ears, and vomiting. There are also suggestions that it may lead to hyperactivity in children, as well as asthma, rhinitis, and dermatitis. It may also further aggravate ADHD symptoms, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder symptoms, and cause restlessness. Long-term, high doses of TBHQ in laboratory animals have shown a tendency for them to develop cancerous precursors in their stomachs, as well as cause DNA damage to them. It is also suggested that it may be responsible for affecting estrogen levels in women. This seems to be quite an extensive list of side effects for such a seemingly innocent preservative, although warning bells should immediately ring if the FDA has to impose apparent safe limits on an additive. Being that they're butane-based, it may also be wise to take a few steps back from that barbecue flame while consuming your crisps. Definitely, this is an additive that should be avoided. And that's actually from Natural News that I'm bringing that. Coming back to this, again, as I said, TBHQ is an additive used to prevent spoilage. Maximum allowed concentration of 200 parts per million. It's unclear how much TBHQ people are exposed to, though estimates based on model diets have suggested that some U.S. consumers eat almost double the maximum amount, the maximum allowable amount of TBHQ. suggested by the joint FAO and World Health Organization Expert Committee on Food Additives, and that people in other parts of the world may consume up to 11 times the maximum allowable amount. The level of TBHQ exposure in the research done by Freeborn at Michigan State University, these studies fall within estimates of human exposure. It can be hard to know if you're consuming TBHQ, as it's not always listed on ingredient labels, adding that this is often the case when TBHQ is used in food preparation, such as in the oil used to fry a chip. Ha! The best way to limit TBHQ exposure is to be cognizant about food choices. Since TBHQ is largely used to stabilize fats, a lower fat diet and cutting down on processed snacks will help reduce TBHQ consumption. You want to stay away from these nasty processed fats. Freeborn emphasized that getting a yearly flu shot remains the best way to prevent influenza infection. So, according to those researchers, very interesting. So you want to avoid TBHQ as often as you can. You don't know what you're getting in a restaurant, but, you know, you want to be careful the things that you order. And you can always ask your server. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine.
Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.